There's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, the show that lets you take control of your health so you can live at the top of your curve. We're privileged this half hour to have Dr. Ramakrishna, who's a double doctor, MD, PhD, Director of Neurologic and Pediatric Radiation Oncology at the University of Florida Health Center, Cancer Center in Orlando, and will talk to us about proton therapy. Dr. Ramakrishna, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome, Mike.
Now, I said protein maybe once when I've been saying it, and it's really proton. What is a proton, and why does it work as a therapy?
Well, we've been using x-rays for therapy since the 1890s after Madame Curie and Rentgen discovered them. And x-rays have been very good for us, but protons are, of course, the positively charged particle, which we can use in ways that have many advantages over x-rays when we treat cancer.
So the advantages come because of what, the size of the energy or the length of the penetration, or what gives the proton advantages over standard x-rays?
So protons are charged particles, whereas x-rays are very lightweight photons. And the way that they deposit dose as you treat a tumor is very different. The x-rays are going to give dose to the skin and then the tissue on the way to the tumor, and then also on the way out of the tumor, an exit wound, if you will. The proton, on the other hand, will deposit dose in skin and on the way to the tumor, but there's no exit wound. In other words, there's really no dose beyond where the tumor is in the path of the proton.
So somehow the tumor stops the energy and it's all deposited there. Why hasn't this been done for the full 100 years? Why did we do just x-rays for so long?
Well, x-rays are far easier to generate than proton beams. So we take these protons, basically, and we have to accelerate them in the same type of device that scientists use to study subatomic particles, like the Large Particle Collider in Switzerland that you've heard about. So basically, we use something called a synchrocyclotron, and we take these protons. They come in a bottle. They basically are hydrogen atoms stripped of their electron. And then we accelerate those protons around a loop, around and around until they reach about 6/10 the speed of light, and then we let them loose in a beam that goes into the patient.
And
so this technology was extremely expensive. And it was very complex until, and it still is, but it's more approachable now. It's been around since really the 1940s and 50s as a technology, but was extremely difficult until recently.
So we used to have one of these devices. I think it was actually handmade, if you can say. Obviously not handmade, but made as a one-off at the University of Chicago, if you will, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. But now, are they commercially available? You said there, as I read the review, it says there are 23 of these in the United States now. Obviously, the Orlando Health Center, we ought to give your website, by the way, so that if you want to learn more about proton therapy, it's proton-therapy or proton-therapy.org. And the University of Florida Health Cancer Center in Orlando's website looks like it's ufhealthcancerorlando.com. But
that's correct.
These are more common now, right? You managed one at Harvard, and now you're doing one in Orlando.
Right. Even 15 years ago, there was only about 5 centers in the U.S., and so it was very rare to find a patient that was going to get proton therapy. Worldwide, there were under 10 15 years ago. So because the technology has improved through the use of superconducting magnets and so on, it's the price has dropped and it's become easier to do.
But it's still a rare, and yet you have a big building, right? Because you've got to
correct
accelerate in these rays.
Yes, in the old days, I mean, it took a building that was almost the size of a football field, and they got it to half a football field. Then they've continued to shrink that down. Now we're down to a three-story building, which is still quite massive compared to an X-ray radiation treatment machine, but is quite a bit smaller than the machines that used to be used for proton therapy.
Now, Dr. Ramakrishna, I know your background in that you did get your bachelor's degree in biology at Hopkins, medical degree at Cornell Weill School of Medicine, and that also was you were one of those unique people, medical scientist training program, which means you get an MD and a PhD after a brutal course of time, and then you served on the faculty at Harvard after your residency. How many people are trained in this? It must be not a common thing if there were only a few machines 15 years ago.
You're absolutely right. It's really relatively new for the vast majority of practitioners. I would say that probably less than 5% of the radiation oncologists out there right now have experience with this. Over time, certainly that's going to change. But it is different and quite a bit more complex in some ways than treating with X-ray.
Now, we've got a question on the line from Jennifer, who says, who would get this? Why would this be used? Is it used for breast cancer? Is it used for just brain cancers? What is it used for, and why is it used? Why do you need that much more specific thing? And she says, my father has prostate cancer. Is this used for that?
Okay, well, let me start with the beginning of that question. And generally speaking, protons, because they weren't available widely, were initially used for a very restricted range of tumors, ones that really needed that special dose property that protons have over X-rays. So they were used for certain types of eye tumors, certain spinal cord and brainstem tumors, and also, interestingly, for pediatric cancer. The reason being is that often when we're treating a child, we'll be treating a tumor that's right next to some vital organ, and the ability to prevent dose to those developing organs is very important, even more important than it would be in an adult. So that was the classic indication. But now that we have more machines, we're looking at many other applications for protons. We've used them for some prostate cancers, although that remains somewhat controversial. We're not sure how much better it is for them. We've used it for lung cancers, and we feel that there is going to be evidence that in some patients it's probably the only safe way to treat them. We're using it for some left-sided breast cancers, and the reason we use it for those particular cases is to decrease the amount of dose that goes to the surface of the heart and to the ventricle where you have your coronary artery. What we found is that women that have left-sided breast cancers and that get radiation will have an increased risk of developing heart attacks later in life. So that's a particular subset of breast cancer patients that we're excited about treating.
And the interesting thing, Dr. Ramakrishna, we're going to have come back with this question because we've gotten bombarded. You can always send us emails, questions, udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com, but a series of questions that say, why does this deliver its energy at a specific spot? How do you direct it there versus a different spot? Like, why, if you're giving it to a left breast, why does it give it to the tumor and not to the heart? What determines how deep it goes? And so we'll get into those questions when we come back. We're talking with Dr. Ramakrishna, who is a superb expert, as you've heard, on proton therapy. For general information, proton.therapy.org. He is at the University of Florida Health Cancer in Orlando, ufhealthcancerorlando.com. We'll be right back.
And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
You're listening to You, the Owner Manual, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with me, the host, Dr. Mike Roizen. I sound like I shouldn't be the host right there. And we are talking with a real expert in a very specific field. Dr. N.R. Ramakrishna is a double doctor, MD, PhD, as most are in this exclusive field of radiation oncology, which means using radiation's energy to treat cancers. He is director of the Neurologic and Pediatric Radiation Oncology at the University of Florida Health Cancer Center in Orlando. The website is ufhealthcancerorlando.com. And if you want to learn more about proton therapy, it's proton-therapy.org. To learn more about it, we were just answering a question from a listener. Actually, you can always send us emails at udocs@gmail.com or call in 844-305-7800. Dr. Ramakrishna, why does the proton therapy machine, or the proton therapy beam, I guess you'd say it, end up giving its energy to a tumor cell and not to normal cells along the way or after it sees the tumor cell? What is it that lets you do it so precisely as to be able to treat small tumors in children and in brain tumors this way?
So, Michael, the advantage of proton beams compared to X-ray beams really is primarily in the region beyond the tumor. And let me explain why. Both X-rays and protons do deliver some dose on the way to the tumor. But the majority of dose for a proton beam is delivered in a sharp peak, which is at a depth which we calibrate to correspond to the tumor. And how we do that is by changing the energy of the proton. So the higher energy we accelerate the proton with, the deeper it'll go before it releases its energy in something which is called the Bragg peak. The Bragg peak is this very sharp release of energy that the proton does at a certain depth defined by how much energy you accelerate it with. On the way to that point, it releases some energy, but the vast majority is released in this peak. And so we can put together protons of a range of energies, and that allows us to treat a tumor which is at a certain depth and of a certain size.
So a lot of what the expertise, that relates to another question. This is a question in Cleveland asked, and the question he asked was, what is the expertise and why does it require a double doctorate to do this? And why isn't it easily trained? And I guess the expertise is to knowing exactly the energy for the depth and how to position the patient and how to make sure the patient, I guess, doesn't move much when you're delivering the dose.
Well, I don't know necessarily that you need the double doctorate. My PhD is in molecular biology. But the expertise really requires a team of physicists and of physicians, because protons are extremely sensitive to the type of material that is in the path of the beam. In other words, if you're treating a patient, for instance, somewhere in the brain, and you have to go through their frontal bone and sinuses, the proton is going to be extremely sensitive to whether or not there's fluid in the sinuses, how dense the sinuses are in general. And unless you're extremely careful about how you pick how the proton enters and what materials it goes through, you could end up releasing your dose in the wrong place, because the length that the proton traverses is determined not just by how deep something is in the body, but what types of tissue and different types of elements are present in that tissue. So So these are the kind of more complex things that we have to worry about with protons in comparison to X-ray.
And so the difference in, I guess, the side effects of the two is an important question. So let's, I guess, review that or be specific about it. What's the difference in side effects of a proton beam versus an X-ray?
Well, let me give you two examples from our first few patients. One was a physician who basically developed a tumor during her second trimester of pregnancy, and then we basically induced labor when it was safe, and it was an inoperable tumor in the brain, and so we started treatment and treated her successfully. Now, the big advantage of protons in her case was that the tumor was right next to her optic nerve, and it was also close to an area of the brain important for short-term memory. And given that she's a very intelligent woman, this was an extremely important concern for her. With protons, we were able to reduce the dose to that area by a factor of 5 in comparison to the best X-ray treatment we could have done. So that was remarkable. We also were able to keep the dose off of her optic nerve in a way that we couldn't have done with X-rays. So this was fortunately a benign tumor. So the side effects over her lifetime are going to be dramatically lower. We also treated a pediatric patient with a tumor of the brain and spine and were able to prevent dose from going beyond the spine into the developing organs. And this is a patient that's going to be cured, fortunately. So this was another dramatic example of how proton treatment could be much better.
So I guess the amazing thing is it's 1/5 the dose of the total dose of radiation, but because it's directed, the tumor actually gets the same or even more dose.
Correct.
That's remarkable. Now, one of the questions came in is this excuse me, usable for skin tumors? In other words, one of the things the person said is, I'm worried I'm getting, if I get radiation for skin tumors versus cutting them out, would the radiation go deep into my body, and can you use this for skin tumors?
It's a great question. And as a matter of fact, protons are a little bit of a disadvantage for tumors in the skin because of the way that they deliver their dose. They need some more depth in order to really have a good dose distribution. So we use a different particle, which is actually quite common and available at most centers, called electrons. So electrons actually are sort of a poor man's proton, if you will, and they have some of the same qualities of protons in terms of sparing things that are lower or deeper than the tumor. So electrons would be the right answer for her.
We've been talking with Dr. Rami Krishna, RamKrishna, who is the Director of Neurologic and Pediatric Radiation Oncology at the University of Orlando Health. Proton-therapy.org is the way you can find out more. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show,